Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Both hailing from parts unknown at a combined weight of 501 pounds. They are the Morning Rush Hour World Tag Team Champions. They have no fear, no back down, just a couple of gutsy guys. No one will take those MRH World Tag titles from these men. It's Taz, it's the Moose, illustrious champions, right here every day on CBS Sports Radio.
You know it's every day, Moose and Taz be paving the way. Talking about every sport, you know that they never missing a play. From the NBA to the NFL, the college games, they always bringing the knowledge, nobody ever can try to go stop it. Only me talking the truth, only me talking the truth, ayy. You know it's Taz and Moose, you know it's Taz and Moose, ayy.
All right, it is Taz and the Moose with you here on this Friday morning, action-packed Friday. A little football, a little baseball, hour number one. We continue the football theme now as we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Who understands that it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage? That's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. As we welcome aboard Russell Baxter, NFL writer for Fansided.com, joins us now. Hey, Russell, Mark Malusis, Andrew Bogish with you here on this Friday morning. Thanks for a couple minutes, bud.
Oh, no problem at all. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, Russell. Doing well. And, you know, we talked a lot about the Giants and Pats and the Thursday night affair. And there's a number of different storylines to get into that one. We'll run around the league with you as well. You know, let's start here. Bogish and I were talking about during the course of the break. What do you make of it? Of these challenges to pass interference, where it obviously looks like pass interference. And last night was another perfect case in point. Down 21 late, 3rd and 10 pass down the field to Golden Tate. He was clearly interfered with. Now the call on the field was upheld, which was not pass interference. But if that's not pass interference, I don't know what is. Why do you think we're not getting these overturns of bad calls on the field like many anticipated we would?
Because we're not getting them right on the field to begin with, and that is the source of the problem. I think adding another interpretive element into the officiating just kind of mucks up the works a little. Judgment calls like this have always been an issue, and it goes back for years and years and years and years. The same thing with a catch. I mean, for 6 years we didn't know what a catch was. So, the problem is with these calls now is you have to have something really dramatic happen to overturn it. It's almost like saying not guilty, if you understand what I mean. It doesn't, you couldn't prove they didn't do it, all right? So that I'm probably not being very, very clear, but what they're telling you is you might be right, but it's going to take a dramatic interpretation by someone else to reverse it. So the call on the field will always get the benefit of the doubt, and as we saw last night, as we have seen in several games, that really shouldn't be the case.
Russell, this came up in the break between Moose and I because I was reading Charles Robinson at Yahoo Sports writing that, that was such a blatant miss last night, both on the field and then in the booth back in New York with Al Riveron, that Charles got to the conclusion that the only thing that could be going on here, or at least what's now possible, is that these are like spite decisions by the officials because the coaches got the replay system changed in the offseason. That is conspiracy theory-ish, but is there any room in your head for the officials maybe, putting their middle finger back up at the coaches for the fight that they put up after the Saints game last year?
I don't know if I go that far, but listen, human nature is human nature. And, when you go back to the old replay system back in the late 80s, I think 1986 was the first year we had quote-unquote instant replay, a different system and so on. And there was always that kind of hesitation by the officials themselves on whether you know, they were going to have a call overturned, and then were they as effective as they should be? Listen, it's a game played by human beings. Human beings make mistakes, but human beings can also be very, very sensitive. So I don't know if I'd go that far and so on, but, you know, I would say that in certain instances, I'm sure you might not necessarily rule that. It's almost like, I mean, think about it. In some ways, it's almost like being an umpire, being upstaged by a manager, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right about that. That's a good point, Russell. All right, let's transition away from that. Let's talk a little bit about some of these teams out there. Down in Washington, a team that's near and dear to my heart. You know, I know people are going to say, well, there's only a certain amount of jobs. Every job, you know, has its positives. Now, I guess my question is how attractive is this Redskins head coaching job, Russell?
Well, I mean, I look at the structure of the team. Since Daniel Snyder's team for a little over 20 years. He's on his, and I count in interim head coaches, by the way, because interim head coaches count because sometimes they get kept. Bill Callahan is his ninth head coach. Okay. Now, you know, I know some other teams are worse and so on, but you know, from the Scott McLuhan issues from a couple of years ago to who's really running the store there, I don't know how attractive this job is whatsoever. And, you know, I'm in the midst. I did some out loud thinking here. I'll run this by you guys. So the Redskins are at Miami this week,
yeah.
Correct?
Yes. Miami's
kind of had this label of being accused of tanking for Tua or tanking for the season, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so if the Redskins lose to Miami, who's tanking?
Well, but the Redskins, here's the funny thing, Russell. The Redskins aren't trying. They're actually trying to be good.
Is that funny or sad?
That's sad. The Redskins are actually trying to give you a yeoman's effort. Miami's put up the white flag and said, you know what?
Right.
We'll see in 2020, which is worse. I think the Redskins are worse because they're trying to actually win football games.
Well, you know what's funny? I would say talent on the field right now, and this is splitting hairs, I think Washington's a better football team.
Yeah.
As far as the future goes, I think the Dolphins are in better shape because
Agreed.
Of what the collateral they have built. But, you know, you go back to how the team is run or not being run and so on, and this has been kind of a constant problem. I mean, I'm trying to think, other than 2012, you know, the late surge with Robert Griffin as the rookie quarterback was a 10-win season. They haven't won 10 games a lot over the last two decades.
Russell, where are you, before we leave the Dolphins, where are you on Josh Rosen long-term as a quarterback in this league?
I like what he shows. I like the fight in him. I mean, I think the skills are there. He's obviously been dumped into two really, really hard situations. I mean, the Cardinals were the worst team in the league last year, 3-13. He was thrown in there, the third or fourth game. By the seventh game, Mike McCoy was fired, you know, sacked. Turnovers. Now comes over to Miami. They're in the midst of change. I like to say changing their culture, because what they're really trying to do is rid themselves of a philosophy that has gotten them in trouble for about 10 years. And that's constantly just trying to fix things one year at a time instead of building a foundation. He should be part of the foundation. So I like the move. They gave relatively little to get him. And so on. He's a young prospect who obviously was a first-round pick last year, and a lot of people thought. Remember the what the narrative out was Josh Rosen last year of the quarterbacks who were drafted in 2018. He was quote unquote the most ready to play. Okay. And he was ready to play. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if everybody else around him was, too.
No, that's a good point. You know, some interesting matchups here, you know, kind of highlight the slate. Let's head out to Minnesota, Russell. When you look at this Vikings and Eagles matchup on Sunday out in Minneapolis, Minnesota got healthy last week, and the Giants, the Eagles certainly, with all their injuries on defense, has battled their way to a 3-2 record. What's the intriguing aspect? What are you looking forward to this one?
Can Philadelphia's secondary, which has been a problem, you know, going back to actually a couple of years, correct me if I'm wrong, the last time we were in that building, somebody threw for 505 yards against them.
True.
You know, but they also won the game, so let's not leave that out. You know, it depends on what Kirk Cousins, I think, we see, and more importantly, what game plan we see. Even those games where they won and they didn't really let him throw the football, even though they won, I thought that was a detriment. This was a team last year that barely could run the football. They've changed that. I still don't think their pass protection is all that good. You know, the biggest problem I have with Minnesota and Cousins is not the fact that they're inconsistent with how they use him this year. It's the fact that throughout his career, guys, he just does a terrible job of protecting the football. Okay? There are a lot of quarterbacks who get a lot of sacks handed to them, but they don't cough up the football as much as he can. I'm not talking about interceptions. I'm talking about lost fumbles. Last year, he lost 7 fumbles of the 9 times he fumbled. We saw that earlier this season. If Minnesota plays the balanced kind of football they did last week against the Giants, and albeit the Giants' defense is, that's a whole different story. But more like they played against the Raiders, they should be fine. But to me, Philadelphia is very, very erratic. I know they put up 31 in the Jets last week. I think they're very, very inconsistent. I don't think they've played a complete game last week. And of those 31 points last week, 2 were turnovers by the Jets that they returned for touchdowns.
Russell, what's your number one reason for the Browns' struggles on offense?
Offensive line. Baker Mayfield being inaccurate. They look like a 45 record playing at 78 speed. Does that make sense?
Not to me. I'm too young for that.
I'm a little older. That makes sense to me, Russell.
They are not in sync. I mean, and even it took them a quarter and a half against Baltimore to get that running game going. But I think their defense, which is very, very aggressive, can also be had. I mean, Myles Garrett's had a terrific year. They've got some solid players. Their secondary's been banged up for a majority of the year. But San Francisco, talking about speed, San Francisco made the Browns look like they were standing still the other night, okay, in all facets. And I think they get it. The Browns have not yet learned how to win consistently. They've learned how to win sporadically. They also have kind of a new cast of offensive characters. But every time they seem to get something going the other night, something went wrong. That Callaway interception at the goal line, which bounced up into the air and went the other way. And I think Baker Mayfield is pressing. But I do know that Baker Mayfield is truthful when it comes to handshakes.
Yeah, well, that is true. You're right about that. And Richard Sherman making up that story, which makes little to no sense. And then the apology afterward. Speaking of Sherman and the Niners, are you a believer as they go into Los Angeles to take on the Rams this weekend?
This, to me, has to be the believability part of it, okay? Because the Rams have had, the 49ers within the division last year. By the way, last 5 years in the division, I know their overall record isn't that great. 7-23. This is a team that's lost 8 straight games to the Cardinals, much less beating the Seahawks and the Rams. The Rams hung 87 points on them in 2 games last year. So this to me is really the asset test. I know who they've beaten, and they have performed extremely well. Their running game has been dominant. Okay, and even though they, have had some injuries there, they've got their tackles banged up as well. Kyle Shanahan's been very, very creative on how everybody gets the football. He showed that last year when they didn't have Garoppolo and they didn't have Jerick McKinnon. He found other guys to be productive. I mean, we would have never heard of George Kittle, I think, if not for last year and him being in a completely different role. Now he's a Pro Bowl tight end. But you have to beat the teams that you have to beat. They have to prove they can consistently beat the Rams. I mean, they've lost 3 out of 4 of them, and the one game they beat them was when Sean McVay sat everybody in Week 17 of 2017 when they were headed to the playoffs. So it's not that I don't believe, but I think I'd be a little more convinced if I can see them beat somebody within the division.
Russell, are the Lions legit? And in terms of being an elite NFC team, and what do you expect them to do on Monday night in Lambeau?
I don't know if they're necessarily an elite team. The one thing that's bothered me a little bit, first off, the one thing I like about them is they have finally, and Darrell Bevell plays a big role in this, they're running the football. We have seen them in the last 5 or 6 years become so one-dimensional. I think at least once or maybe twice they were dead last in the league in rushing. Ask the Packers last year what happens when you don't run the football. They had the fewest running attempts in the entire league last year. They've kind of gone more balanced. So Kerryon Johnson helps Matthew Stafford an awful lot. And but the one thing that is concerns me is how they have played in the fourth quarter, and, of course, the overtime. They squandered the big lead to the Cardinals. They let Patrick Mahomes come down the field the last time we saw them. I want to say they've given up 95 points this year, and almost half of them, 42, have come in the fourth quarter in overtime. So I know they've beaten the Packers 4 times in a row. I know they've won at Lambeau 3 of the last 4 years, and that's, you know, I know the Packers have not had Aaron Rodgers every time, but more times than not they've had. So, again, on the road in the division, the Packers have been, you know, they're 2-0 in the division, including a win at Chicago. It's, again, another prove-me game. But that division from top to bottom is just solid. I mean, everybody is above 500 at this stage. And I think the thing that will be interesting this week, even though it's a divisional game for the Packers, is avoiding a little bit of a letdown after the way they played in the first half against Dallas.
You know, Russell, to Jacksonville, they get set to entertain the Saints this weekend. In Bridgewater, the Saints have done a great job with Breeze's absence and having that thumb surgery. Jacksonville, though, Ramsey, November 1st, do you think he's a Jaguar? And the other aspect of it is Gardner Minshew. Minshew mania taking over the National Football League. Now, I know there are guys that have kind of become stars right before your very eyes. Mm-hmm. A guy to come out of nowhere. I mean, and he really came out of nowhere to kind of captivate everyone's imagination. It's been really a remarkable story.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you look at Jack, even the year that Jacksonville went to the AFC title game in 2017, you would certainly not accuse their offense of being exciting or productive. I mean, that was a team that got like 7 or 8 defensive touchdowns on interceptions and fumble returns. And, you know, you got a big year from Leonard Fournette and so on. But Leonard Fournette looks like he's a little bit rejuvenated. Minshew has definitely brought a little moxie to that team. They've been in every game they played this year. Even when Foles went down in week 1, they hung tough with Minshew and, you know, made it as competitive as they could against the Chiefs. This is a tricky game for the Saints, you know, and credit to Sean Payton and really that organization, because they have really become less dependent on Drew Brees the last 2 or 3 years. They're a more balanced football team. I think the key to this one on Sunday is, can they keep Minshew out of harm's way? I don't think the Saints' defense, which is still a little shaky on the back end, but their defensive front, their linebackers, that's a pretty formidable front 7. And, you know, but again, last week, never say die against Carolina. They gave up a ton of rushing yards to Christian McCaffrey and to the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, before you knew it, they're making plays and so on. It's funny, they went to the AFC title game in 2017. I think this team right now might be better than that 2017 team.
Yeah, good point. Wouldn't disagree with you there. And certainly offensively, a lot more explosive. Hey, Russell, we appreciate the time this morning. Thanks for getting up early for us. And have a great Friday. Enjoy all the football this weekend, all right?
Oh, just to correct you, it's football season. I don't sleep until February.
I can understand that. You're all over the place, Russell. Russell Baxter, fansided.com. Check him out. Hop online as well. It gives you a good feel, certainly, of all the intriguing storylines going on around the National Football League. And we'll see what Minshew and the Jaguars can do back at home this weekend as they take on Bridgewater and the New Orleans Saints. I mean, two remarkable stories when you think about it. That New Orleans team has kind of picked it up with the Breeze injury, and then Minshew has made everybody forget about Nick Foles and his recovery from that broken collarbone. We'll come back. It's Melusis and Bogish. Taz of the Moose. Taz out sick here on this Friday morning. Hopefully he's back with us on Monday. We got college picks coming up, NFL picks coming up. We'll get into the managerial search in Major League Baseball as another job came open yesterday as well. You're locked in right here, CBS Sports Radio.
Give Taz and the Moose a call, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
listening to Taz and Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
There you go, Jackson. We got hockey Sunday afternoon. I don't actually have work this Sunday because of the London game. So no show with Deal on WFAN locally in New York, right? No FanDuel on Sunday. So Jackson's got hockey evaluations.
Evaluations?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
So from 4 to 5, we have to show up at Ice House up in Stanford, and they put the kids through drills, and then they put them, you know, obviously they decipher at the talent level and then put them on teams to, you know, figure out which teams to have the teams evenly matched.
Is this 4 a.m.? Because you never know with hockey.
No, thank God. Okay. No. If it's 4 a.m., I'd be like, Donna, it's all yours.
Drive yourself.
All right, I'll take care of the boys as we sleep. I don't know where I'll get to that in a second. I don't know where we'll be sleeping, but hopefully it's home.
Oh, my goodness.
Sunday, it's an NFL on CBS doubleheader with many of you seeing two of the most dynamic young quarterbacks in the game airing it out when Mahomes and the Chiefs welcome Watson to the Texans, followed by the Cowboys visiting the Jets. It all begins with JB and the guys getting you focused for football on the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. So, I joke and I cry all at the same time because yesterday, right, we do a bang-up show here, Taz and myself, yesterday.
Heard it. It was good.
Right. And so I'm going back into the city because I have, you know, Loudmouth, a show yesterday that I'm doing at 5:30 on SNY locally in New York, right, the home of the Mets. And so I'm walking into the building down at 4 World Trade Center, and I get a call from my wife, Donna. And I go, what's up? And she goes, there's a ringing in the house and an alarm going off, and we can't find out where the alarm is. We checked all the smoke detectors. We checked all, you know, the carbon monoxide detector. We checked all that, but we can't find where this alarm is going off. And I said, uh-oh.
That sounds good.
Right. So I said to myself, well, it could only be one other thing. And that is the fact that I have a water detector downstairs in the basement.
Oh, no.
So I said, listen, I check downstairs because there's a water alarm downstairs that I had set up because my dad, the great Paul Malusa, said, better put a water detector down after our water heater went year one of our house and flooded our entire basement.
Mm-hmm.
Donna goes downstairs and there's 3 inches of water in our basement. And in the crawl space next to our staircase, we have like kind of a, not a big basement, semi-finished. Half of it is kind of a, you know, where the boiler is or the heater and the air conditioning unit and everything right. Like that. That's all like kind of like, that has a door. And then we have a little bit of an area where the kids can play. And then there's a crawl space area. And we have well water. So, not city water, well water. So, where the heater, where the AC unit is, where the water heater is, all that, there was water all over the floor, right? Then you go into the crawl space where we have stuff stored, right?
Mm.
We have, like, stuff from our wedding, kids' clothes that they no longer wear and everything like that. It's all in crates and stuff like that. There was 4 inch of water in the crawl space. So my wife in the meantime goes, oh my God, there's so much water. And I go, how bad? She immediately hangs up the phone, calls the plumber, right? Calls our well guy, calls our insurance company.
You need a well guy.
Yes, a well guy, because the plumber and he's a good guy, right? The Tucciardi's, they come flying over, right? And they find out where the leak is coming from. It's a busted pipe coming from the well. The well guy comes over. We have no water in the house.
Right.
Insurance company has put Donna and the boys up in, you know, where we've got a hotel for the next 4 nights because the well guy doesn't know how long it will take to fix it. But meanwhile, all of our stuff is ruined. Now, long story short here, or long story long, as they say in the trade, here, owning a house stinks.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. If you never have to own a house, don't. Because I understand everyone says don't waste money and pay rent and this and that. We have bought the complete and utter money pit. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. Whether it be leaks in the house, in the roof, whether it be the fireplace issues, which is still yet to be resolved, even though we've had 3 guys come over and say, took care of it. We still have, whenever it rains, we have water coming down the fireplace. We've had 3 now massive leaks down in the basement. One by a broken water heater, now by a broken pipe going to the well. Stuff has been trashed and ruined. I have talked to the insurance company basically more than I've talked to my wife in the last 6 months. And it has been a complete and utter disaster owning a home, to where now the point is my wife is crying and upset on the phone last night because of all the stuff that is ruined and all the stuff that's sentimental. I mean, there's stuff that has great value to it, right? You know, some of her, you know, bags and stuff like that. But there are other stuff that's sentimental, right? Stuff that, you know, we have a co-sleeper that all the kids slept in next to our bed, right? And that is sentimental value. It has no value to anybody else, but to us, it has some sentimental value. They're clothes, like pictures of me and my wife before we even had kids and stuff like that. All that stuff was all sitting in 4 inches of water.
Yeah.
It's an utter disaster. And now we have no idea when we will have running water back in the house again. The well guy said, I'm canceling everything on my Friday, which is today. I'll be there at 10 a.m. You might have water by the end of the day. Maybe. If not, hopefully by Saturday.
What will it take to get to the broken pipe? Do you know?
That's the other thing. He's not sure. He does not know if he has to go into the foundation to get to the pipe.
Oh, man. It really is. It's
a disaster. It is a disaster. We bought, if you ever watched the movie Tom Hanks and Money Pit with Shelley Long, great movie. That, and our house is not nearly as big, not even close. It's basically maybe the first floor, not even the first floor. Our house is a complete and utter money pit.
Yeah. I feel like I have the JV version of your house, because we've had a number of issues since we've moved in, and this is year six in our house. But I've somehow found all of the catastrophic things happening almost immediately.
Well, could you come by our house?
I don't know
and maybe
how.
Give us a little of assessment.
I don't know.
Let us know where we're going to go wrong. Pinpoint areas of what could be, what things need to be resolved before they fall apart and collapse. I'm afraid I'm going to walk home. The roof is going to collapse.
No. See, this is not a preemptive thing for me. We had our first basement leak in June. And the only reason why our basement didn't become a swimming pool was because, like most basements, in the summer, my basement gets, you know, it gets a little humid.
Yeah, it gets a little moist.
So I have a dehumidifier down there manually turn on and off. Now, normally, most nights, I turn it off. It doesn't run 24/7. I usually turn it off when I go to bed, and I can set a timer that it goes back on in the morning while I'm here. For whatever reason, on this one night, I don't even know why, I didn't turn the timer on. I just forgot. So the next morning I woke up and the forecast was for humidity and rain. And I was like, I don't think I did the humidifier. So I went down in the basement before coming here, and I get down the stairs. And as I'm pressing the button on the humidifier, I hear splashing noises. I'm like, that's not a noise I should be hearing. And I open up my boiler room, and there's water coming out of the front of my boiler.
Oh,
like where the gas pipe and the control box meets the tank. The tank didn't fail.
Safe.
Yeah, the thing that screws into the tank somehow has a history of failing, and ours failed and joined the long list of this defective part. But I got it into an hour of it leaking, so only like a third of my basement got destroyed.
Oh.
Because my wife would have never gone down there.
Yeah.
So it would have run like yours did for hours and hours and hours, and then who knows when we would have figured it out. And we could have had a completely full of water basement.
Well, luckily that alarm went off, because we don't really go on down the basement in the regular, right?
And I have an alarm that the water didn't go to. So now I have an alarm in a different place where apparently my basement is pitched. So the water ran away from my initial water sensor.
Oh, went
so
away
now
from
I've got, So now I've got one on the other side of the tank that presumably will be hit the second there's another leak, if there ever is one, which there shouldn't be, or I'll kill somebody.
Well, thank God that alarm went off, because basically I would have had an indoor pool if it didn't.
Right.
The water would have just been flowing and flowing and flowing until we had to go downstairs and get some paper towels.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. We don't go down the basement on the regular. The kids, even though they have a nice play area, refuse to go down there and play because they're scared of it. So, I mean, we made this nice area for them to play in. There's toys all over the place, and they don't want to go down there and hang out, which that's fine, but what's the point of building that area? And luckily, the alarm went off, or else basically the water still would be flowing right now till I went down there, and there could have been basically 3 feet of water.
Right.
It is a And I am a pretty good-natured guy for the most part. I really rarely ever get angry. Like, I hate my house.
Yeah.
Like, it's reached a point where I am angry. Like, I texted my wife last night, like, I don't want to go home this morning. Like, I'm angry at the house. I can never imagine being angry at an object or a thing and not somebody that's got a heartbeat. Like, you get angry at, you know, you can get angry at a coworker, you can get angry at your kids for doing something dopey and stupid, you can get angry at people. I've never been angry at my car, who's got 325,000 miles on it. I've never been angry at, it's taking care of me. She's been one of the best things in my life, my car, right? So I am angry at my house. Like, I do not want to go home. Like, I am ticked off, I am bothered, and I am angry. Because every time it fails, and it costs me money. And I'm talking to the insurance company, and it's just one thing after another. And I told my wife last night, I'm like, listen, let's fix it. Let's fix whatever we need, and let's get the hell out.
Yeah.
I think we've learned our lesson for the last 5.5 years. Get the hell out of the house.
So when you're trying to sell the house, we will delete this podcast from the record so nobody knows about it.
Nothing's wrong.
We'll put a different version. Great, great place, great area, location, location, location.
We love that well.
We'll make a marker on this podcast.
Exactly.
Well water. Love it. Swear by it.
Exactly. The value went down 50 grand because, well, we earned some stuff.
The house is in great shape. It's in great shape. Listen. I'll tell you this, we'll leave it in better shape than it is, but I am done. I told my wife, I'm done. Get me out. I don't care where we move, where we live. It doesn't matter. I need out of this freaking house. I can't take it anymore. I can't take the calls about alarms going off. I can't take the calls about water. I can't take the calls about leaks in the roof. I can't take a call. Here's the other thing that happened the other day. Driving into the driveway, right? All of a sudden, we had a sinkhole in the driveway. Sinkhole in the driveway. There is a hole now in our driveway where you look down and it goes down an undetermined amount of time. I put a flashlight down there. The kid's foot can fit basically into the sinkhole. I have no idea if it goes down 2 feet, 3 feet, or 4 feet because of the wet weather we had in the summer. All of a sudden, this sinkhole. Now I call an asphalt company. How much to fix that? Oh, you want to do the whole driveway? No, I don't want to spend 20 grand on a new driveway, nor do I have 20 grand to spend on a new driveway. I'd like to fix that patch. How much does it take that and fix that patch? 5 to 6 grand. My father-in-law says, the hell with that. We'll get some gravel. We'll fill in the hole. My father-in-law came by for 3 successive days with 3 buckets of gravel to fill up the hole. The hole is now filled. How long will that last? I feel like if I park my car over that sinkhole, all of a sudden the front end of my car will basically be 6 feet in the ground.
Oh my goodness, Moose.
It doesn't end.
You should take Monday off, Moose.
It doesn't end.
You should have called out sick today. And it really doesn't. I mean, it just, it's remarkable how, and even, it knows how long it's been since the previous issue. It's like, you know what, he probably now is just maybe relaxed.
Yes, I agree with you.
Let's throw something else at it. Like, I know where, like, the hot spots in my house are. We had a leak in the basement, like, through the foundation. There's a foundation crack, and if it rained a lot, water would seep in. Not up from the ground, which is another problem with some of my friends have had. This one's actually coming through the side of the house.
Oh, that's nice.
So we had to dig things up and re-weatherproof the outside of the foundation.
Oh, beautiful. Doesn't cost you that much.
You know, a window.
All in a day's work.
Right. A window that needed to be resealed because, again, if the wind blew the rain against the window, a little rain would come through. So, like, I know where all the hot spots are. But, when you think that one has now been figured out, it's like, oh, by the way, nope. Come on over here.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Don't worry about this bad boy.
That's exactly right. Just when you think you're happy, you're like, oh, man, it's all done.
And water's just the worst thing ever. It just goes everywhere.
Everywhere.
And my house is like I forget what the technical term is, maybe a split ranch. It's like there's no, like, it's like 2.5 floors. Like the basement, 3 steps up to the main floor, 3 steps up to the kitchen, 5 steps up to the bedroom. It's like a Z. So, like, everything is interconnected and overlapping. So, like, if my sink leaked and we didn't realize it until my wife looked down and she was, like, standing in water while doing the dishes. And she's like, oh, the mat's a little wet. And the water had, like, zigzagged down, like, into the basement and was, like, dripping through one of the light fixtures. I was pulling soaking wet tiles off the ceiling to get to this thing. It's ridiculous.
Right. I have two words for everyone out there looking to buy a home. New construction.
Yeah, but even that, though, like, even because you don't who's building it.
I understand that new construction, and make sure you get a guy that comes over and does a full workup on the entire house. Make sure you get a thorough inspection. New construction, thorough inspection.
Or condo.
Or rent, don't buy. Those that say it's a worthwhile investment, it is in the right house. If you get the wrong house, basically it'll put you in the poorhouse.
Yeah. Breaks your heart.
It is. Sucks. I'm angry. I really am bothered. Watch the Stros beat the Yankees in the ALCS as well. That'll be the cherry on the top.
Don't want that to happen for you. It looked like the game played on Thursday night in windy conditions last night. It wasn't pretty between the Patriots and the Giants. New England surviving 35-14, scoring touchdowns off a blocked punt and a fumble return. Bill Belichick's team is 6-0.
Kind of an odd game. You know, anytime you get three scores in the game that are non-offensive touchdowns, it's kind of a season's worth and all happened in one game.
That third non-offensive touchdown was a Giant returning a Tom Brady fumble for 6 points. Brady was also intercepted. He didn't throw for a touchdown, but he did score on two QB sneaks, and he passed Peyton Manning for second all-time in passing yards. Giants rookie QB Daniel Jones picked off three times, but did throw a 63-yard touchdown to Golden Tate, the first passing score the Pats have allowed this season. The Houston Astros jumped on the Rays in their first inning of Game 5, 4 runs off Tyler Glasnow, but didn't score again until the 8th.
Pagan delivers. And that's driven deep to left center field. Racing back, Kiermaier looking up. See you later! See you later! Back-to-back jacks. First Brantley, now Altuve. It's 6-1 Astros.
That is Robert Ford on Astros Radio. Altuve and Brantley going back-to-back, belly-to-belly, created the 6-1 final score in Houston. Another gem from Gerrit Cole. 8 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 2 walks, 10 Ks. So now we get a third straight ALCS for those Astros. Game 1 with the Yankees in Houston tomorrow night. The Nationals and Cardinals get going this evening. Game 1 in St. Louis, 8:08 Eastern. The NBA says it is protecting the Lakers and Nets from the current controversy in China. Neither team will speak with reporters before or after tomorrow's preseason finale in the country. This decision on the heels of a Rockets PR rep cutting off a CNN reporter yesterday in Japan while she asked James Harden and Russell Westbrook about the situation. On the court here in the States, Steph Curry, 40 points on 6 threes in just 25 minutes. His Warriors got a 143-123 preseason win over the T-Wolves, and the Washington Mystics won Game 5 with the Connecticut Sun, 89-78, to claim the first WNBA title in team history. Moose?
All right, thank you, Andrew. We'll come back. We got some college picks for you. You, me, we got the Taz selections where Bogish or Bilotti will deliver as well. It's Taz and the Moose here on this Friday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
The Taz and Moose picks are for fun only. This is not for gambling purposes, just some chuckles and a good time. Enjoy the Taz and Moose picks now. Listen irresponsibly.
It's now time for the Taz and Moose college football picks. The three picks you need to know.
That's right. CBS Sports Radio, toll-free line, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. Mark down the time there, Bilotti. Here we go. College picks. Taz so far this year is 12-6-3, 2-1 a week ago. I am 11-7. Coming off a 2-1 week. Let's start. We got Taz's picks here. Biseglia, you're going to do the honors. Taz is out sick this morning. He's got Taz's selections. Mike, you ready?
I'm ready for it.
All right, here we go. Fire away.
So, speaking on behalf of Taz, his first college football pick, he likes Iowa +3 playing Penn State.
He likes Iowa +3. Against Penn State. That's pick one for him. Pick one for you, Bogus. Who do you like today, Saturday?
I got no deep football analysis on this one, Moose. It's just simply put, it's a lot of points. I'm going to take the 27 Florida State is getting tomorrow at Clemson.
All right, you're going to take the 27 for Florida State. All right, pick number one for me. We got to go a little Red River Rivalry. Noon start, you know, down the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, Texas, and the Texas State Fair and everything like that. I like Texas. I did coming into the year, and they're 4-1. But I've been really impressed with Jalen Hurts has been able to do. Heisman Trophy favorite as we speak and sit here on this Friday morning. It's a number of 10.5. I'm going to take Oklahoma, and I'm going to lay the 10.5. I just think they're a flat-out better team right now. I do, and I can see that. I think they're going to win this game by double digits. I think Hurts has another show. I get it's a rivalry. You never expect the unexpected. Texas is a really good football team. They are. And their one loss came to the hands of LSU. However, I love what Lincoln Riley and that offense is doing. How could you not do it? Third straight year, third different quarterback, and all they do is score points. Give me Oklahoma laying 10.5. That's pick one for me. All right, pick two for Taz, Mikey B.
All right, sticking with that game, going the opposite way, however. So Texas plus 10.5. Texas plus 10.5.
All right, Taz is taking Texas plus 10.5. That's pick number two for him. Pick number two for you, Andrew.
Moose, let's go in the SEC. I'm going to trust the Florida Gators. Kyle Trask appears to be going in the right direction with his knee injury from last week. They're at LSU. They're getting 13.5. They're not going to win that game. Love the Tigers. Love Joe Burrow. They finally have a QB. They can finally score some points, but I think the Gators keep this one just close enough. So give me the Gators plus 13.5.
All right, Gators plus 13.5. Pick number two for me. We're going to go to South Bend, Indiana. The Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, ninth-ranked team in the land, 4-1 on the season, an entertaining USC rivalry game, who are 3-2 on the year. And obviously a lot of conversations about the future of Helton, their head coach, after this season does come to an end. I'm going to take the 11, and I'm going to take USC on the road in Notre Dame. And I know this rivalry hasn't been much of one as of late, as the Irish have kind of dominated the conversation and dominated the matchup. However, I do think that with the return of the freshman quarterback, the speed at the wide receiver position for USC, I think they can have some success. Listen, I don't think USC's winning the game outright, but can they keep this game and lose by 10? Yeah, I think they can. And you're giving me a full 11. I'm going to take the Trojans plus 11 Saturday night, 7:30 NBC, 7:30 Eastern time. Give me USC plus 11. That's pick number two for me. Pick number three for Taz, Mike.
All right, like Bogish's previous pick, Taz agrees. Florida plus 13.5 against LSU.
All right, Florida plus 13.5 against LSU. That's pick number three for Taz. All right, pick number three for you, Andrew.
Moose, I'm going to go with one of my favorite guys in the country, Dave Clawson, the head coach at Wake Forest, was the head football coach at Fordham when I was there, began the resurgence of the Rams program. Back in the late 90s. And now he has taken Wake Forest to places they have not been in recent memory, if ever. They're laying 6.5 at Louisville. That's no problem for my Demon Deacon. So give me Wake minus 6.5 against Louisville this weekend.
All right, and I'm going to go against both you and Taz with my third and final pick.
Probably smart.
8 o'clock Eastern time. Down in the bayou, Baton Rouge, and as somebody told me that's been to a night game down at LSU, there is nothing like a night game down in LSU. And I think that place is going to be lit, as the millennials would say. Give me LSU. I'm going to lay the 13.5 against Florida. You got to love what that offense is doing for Joe Burrow at quarterback. He's got 22 touchdowns on the year. Defense for LSU is a little bit of a concern. I agree. Florida coming off the kind of white knuckler a week ago against Auburn. Now they go on the road against LSU, and I think the Tigers are going to make a statement in this one. Undefeated on the year at 5-0, remain undefeated. I think they win this game stylishly. Now, I did like Auburn last week. Didn't work out for me. But I'm going to go against Florida for a second consecutive week, and hopefully maybe the betting world is with me this week. Give me LSU laying 13.5. That's pick number three for me. So there you have it. Your 9 picks here on this Friday morning. 3 from Taz.
The rare 9 pack.
3 from Bogish, who's all over Wake Forest and the Demon Deacons laying the 6.5. And the 3 picks for me. When you take a look at it, amazingly enough, week 7 for college football, as we have a game in the books, what was a doozy of a Thursday night affair that went North Carolina State's way over my Syracuse squad, who can't run a 2-minute offense if their life depended on it. So, away you go.
Remember that preseason ranking?
Yes. Well, that's long gone. I celebrated. That was the last time I celebrated Syracuse football in 2019. What's that preseason ranking? We got the 3 coming your way next. Taz, Moose, Bogish in the house. CBS Sports Radio.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for Unfiltered Talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.